further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Sobriety. Moving further every day. Plenty of young cats still got affection for real spitters. Hair of the dog got good reason to feel bitter. Plenty of real bigots burn bridges and meal tickets. I ain't got to be specific. You feel me?
And now it's time for Homegrown, your show about local art. Except it's a special Homegrown today. More local and not so much art. With your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones and David Von Strawn. Here's David and Leslie.
Oh.
Good morning.
And we should, hold on, I should start and say that the opinions expressed on today's show are raw and righteous and true. And the opinions of the people who have expressed them and not the opinions of 94.7 WPVC. All right, let's get down.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I think the first thing we should do is introduce our guests or have them introduce themselves, maybe. That's better.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm Lisa Woolfork, resident of Charlottesville, Black Lives Matter member, as well as associate professor of English at the University of Virginia.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. This is Jenna Hockman. I am a member of Showing Up for Racial Justice, and I'm an organizing party for the network Solidarity Seaville.
So I think this morning what we wanted to do is just give some voice and credence to the people who were on the ground yesterday in different capacities. And, you know, all four of us at this table were there in different capacities. Mm. So I think what we should do first is just kind of go around and talk about what you saw, what your thoughts are about what you saw and what your takeaway from the events of yesterday are.
So, I had the privilege to be in a secure location for most of the day, connecting with my community via, several live streams that we were running and maintaining. That were run and maintained at another secure location, but were, you know, broadcast by the Solidarity Seaville media team. And what I saw was that Charlottesville, by and large, those who were listening and paying attention, came out in an act of community self-defense and were there to take up space and to drive out this presence of hatred, this overt display of bigotry from many people who are interlopers, but many who remain in Charlottesville with us to speak nothing of, you know, the actions of the police force.
Oh, I get to speak? All right. Awesome. My name is David Von Strawn, a.k.a. The Devious One. Hi, everybody. With me always is a lovely, lascivious, loquacious Leslie M. Scott Jones. I also want to offer a disclaimer either. I am an organizer at Black Lives Matter Charlottesville, which is not yet an official chapter, but we're working on it through National. I am also an organizer of Solidarity Seaville, but I am speaking first and foremost as David Von Strawn, a person who was on the ground for the majority of the day, who marched in solidarity and togetherness and in unity with not only community members, but with complete strangers who came and offered their support in a time of need. And people I've never met before, and I don't know the last names of, but they offered me water and burritos and citrus. And we walked hand in hand and we laughed. And we thought the day was won. And then I had the unfortunate, I was unfortunate enough to witness a horrific terrorist incident. Mm. People call it a car accident. I call it a terrorist act. Mm. I watched a woman die a foot away from me. I watched her legs shatter and split open. I watched the eyes roll in the back of her head. And I watched her die. And I will never be the same. I will never forgive the city council for what they have brought into my town, into my home. And we were persistent and we argued our case for months. Mm. This is what's going to happen. And I am not going to say anything as glib as I told you so, but this is what happens when you give white supremacy a pass. And they argue that this is free speech. Well, if there is any type of speech that compromises the freedom of others, it is not free. Mm. And this is on you, Mike Signer. Not Wes Bellamy, not Kristen Zaikos, who voted against this multiple times, as the record shows. This is on you, Mike Signer, and this is on City Council. And let me just say this before I get into things any further, and I'll pass it to the rest of y'all. I saw a lot of Facebook posts about people being home and safe from people who were home and safe from the very beginning, and people who choose and chose to be home and safe from that spot, who ignored the calls for support and who mocked the people that came out to organize and called their attempts futile and counterproductive. And this mostly came from cis straight white males on Facebook posts saying how they were home and safe when you were going to be home and safe the entire time, because you don't get to use your privilege as camouflage and sit on the fence and garner sympathy from people at the same time. You don't get that right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think there's been there's been a lot said. But first of all, I'm here out of grief and heartbreak.
Same.
And I think, David, you gave words to that, so I'm going to let your words ride. But there have been conversations I have had with fellow white folks whose sentiment about yesterday remain within yesterday. And what I mean by that is, that they have repeated our loss. Our loss is Heather Heyer. And they have repeated her words that if you're not outraged, you are not paying attention. Well, I echo David in saying that we've been paying attention. We've been working on this for months, and we will continue to pay attention. That the sentiment that remains with yesterday that I'm talking about is this feeling that, this is not Charlottesville. This is not what Charlottesville represents. And let me be clear, that is a statement of hope from people doing the work of anti-racist activism. That is a sentiment of hope that should remain with the members of Black Lives Matter who are there on the ground, with the students of color from the university who stood and faced an army of Nazis on Friday night. Those words remain with them. For the white folks sitting home, and for the people whose sentiments remain merely with August 12th, that is a spectacle that, you're right, doesn't have an everyday presence in Charlottesville in the way that white supremacy does underpin every level of our society. That's within Charlottesville, and that's within every state in America, as we have never atoned for a violent, racist past.
Here, let's do this. There we go. I wanted to speak very quickly about actually Clinton's introduction about this show's not going to be that much about art today, because I think in some ways it actually is about art. And it reveals to me that symbolic acts have real life consequences. We must never neglect that the reason that we faced so many armed and virulent white supremacist activists yesterday was because of a Confederate monument located at the heart of our city and maintained as a public art project. Mm. This is meant to celebrate white supremacy. For the entire year of the process, we have been describing those of us who have been worked and labored against the statues and promoted their removal, have reminded people that this is not a Civil War statue. It is a Jim Crow statue. It was erected in 1920, not 1867 or 1865 or 1869. This is a product designed to maintain a boundary around then Lee Park as a whites-only space. It was there that this boundary was erected to continue to promote Jim and Jane Crow, as Cornel West likes to say, Jane Crow. And we have to keep that in mind. Some have argued that the statues could be recontextualized, that you can take the same product and turn it in and make it mean something else. However, I believe that we have already had sufficient recontextualization. There is nothing like having a white supremacist rally for four consecutive months in Charlottesville. We had one in May, we had one in June, we had one in July, and we had one in August. These groups are drawn to the magnet of white supremacy that that statue represents, and they are here to defend it. They imagine that removing the statue of Robert E. Lee is tantamount to what they call white genocide. That is what these statues mean, that this art is not simply a relic of the past. It is doing real and damaging work of intimidation and coercion in the present. And we sadly got to see people who were willing to fight and sadly kill to make that point clear. And I would call on city council to follow the lead of a city that's not even a sister city, Lexington, Kentucky, which said yesterday that they would remove their Confederate monuments in light of what happened in Charlottesville yesterday. And I would hope that we would have the courage to say that we cannot sufficiently recontextualize hatred. We cannot sanitize white supremacy and make it palatable in our public spaces any longer. The statue, I believe, should be removed to a museum-like location and not maintained as the heart of Charlottesville.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I was not on the ground in the main action yesterday. I coordinated an event that was organized between Champion Brewery and Black Lives Matter. And it was an art event. It was a chance for artists who just didn't have the emotional fortitude to stand face to face with that kind of hatred, but a chance for them to resist in a different way by creating something that day based in love and community togetherness. So I was present at Champion pretty much the whole day, and we had a really positive, amazing time. We had people that everyone in Charlottesville knows, like Mary Gordon Stewart and David Tewksbury, who came and shared their gifts in solidarity, and it was beautiful. I think the best moment was, so we had a couple of spoken word poets, and a little girl, her name was Maya, and she was, I believe, of Indian descent, and she came up to me right after I introduced the next speaker, and she said, "My sister and I want to do a dance." Mm-hmm. Completely spontaneously. And I was like, "Of course you can." I was like, "Do you have music?" She goes, "Yeah, my dad has it on his phone." I said, "We will figure out a way to play that. Yes, mm-hmm. you can do that." And she and her sister got up on that stage at Champion Brewery, and it was just magical, them expressing themselves in that way.
We're gonna have to pay some bills. We're gonna do a drop. We're gonna come back and talk about the beauty and the ugliness, the joy and the anger of the summer of hate of 2017 in Charlottesville. This is Homegrown. 18 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn. That's Leslie M. Scott Jones. Clinton's on the board. We're talking with Lisa Wolfork and Jenna Hutchman of both of Solidarity Seville and Black Lives Matter, talking about the events of August 12th before and after. We're talking about actually the entire summer of hate, but specifically the events of yesterday. I just want to go back to these statues that these alt-right individuals, I'm just going to say Nazis in the case of brevity, and just putting everything together. 200 of them convened around the statue of Thomas Jefferson on Friday night, not only to commemorate his building of Charlottesville, but also to terrorize the people who were having a congregation of hope and unity across from the Rotunda in St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Let's talk a little bit more about Thomas Jefferson. This man was a womanizer. This man was a drunkard. This man was a slaveholder, and he was a rapist. And I can totally see how they would convene and congregate together and celebrate the legacy of this man, and also continue to beat UVA students and community members with the same torches that they lit to commemorate him. Again, acts of violence, acts of terror, acts of intimidation and fear, with the intent to harm and even kill. And if you are powerful enough to stare into the sun and look at the alt-right's social media network, they're claiming total victory after today. And I can see why. Because they've killed people. And they've harmed people. And they've instilled fear into a community again. And to say that, again, I go back to this being free speech is really disheartening. And you speak, Lisa, about the statues. This is why they're here. They are magnets. They are beacons of hate that flash into the sky, and it draws them in like moths to the flame. And until we remove these statues from our city premises, until we remove them far as the eye can see, or even into a museum where it can be locked and stored away for posterity at particular viewing hours, we will never be free from this terror. And what I ask the city council is that you remove these statues, not tomorrow, but this afternoon. Because if they continue to stand, this will continue to happen. We'll continue to lose lives, and we'll continue to feel pain, and this will go on.
Yeah, I think we need to recontextualize what we call these people as well. Because, you know, they're calling themselves the alt-right, but, I mean, let's be clear. They are the base of the Republican Party. They are. I mean, they have taken over the Republican Party, and I think we have made an error in trying to differentiate them between, you know, make a differentiation between them. Like, they are the Republican Party. They are the right. Period. And I think that needs to be made clear. And maybe if we alter that thought and that thought process about who and who they are and what their goals are, then maybe more people will start to realize that this is not something that is a flash in the pan, that this is not this is not just a small resurgence of some crackpot group. Like, this is a large amount of people who have a tremendous amount of political and social backing. And it's not something that we can ignore. We cannot just say, oh, they're a joke. They're not going to actually get anything done. No, they are getting things done. They are already. Hello? Look who's in the White House.
And I just wanted to add to that, because I believe you're absolutely right. If we think about this, about one important parallel, the Tea Party, if you remember, used to be seen as a fringe element. The Tea Party was seen as a small group of exaggerators, and no one was going to take them seriously. They used to be the fringe, and now they are the center of the Republican Party. In the same way, these white supremacists used to be seen as the fringe, and now one of the owners of one of their major outlets, Breitbart News, is a special advisor to the White House. News venues or outlets that once were seen as lacking credibility or any journalistic standards now have press credentials, and they're in the White House briefing room. And so we are witnessing a clear transition, very much parallel to what happened with the Tea Party in its infancy, that they were discredited. And this is an opportunity, I believe, to remind people that apathy is not a strategy. This notion that we can suggest that Charlottesville should ignore the Klan, Charlottesville should ignore white supremacy. If you don't look at them, they won't see you. If you don't give them the attention they so desperately crave, they will turn away. That is an endorsement, because it suggests that these white supremacists are not dangerous, and it treats them as if they are a group of unruly toddlers. They're unruly toddlers who are at heart good people, but just are wayward. They haven't learned yet. And that is a form of tolerance. That is a form of somehow trying to remove the charge of the evil that they represent. This is not simply a difference in ideology. We cannot erect a false equivalency between white supremacy and racial justice. And this notion that what we are facing here in Charlottesville is something that happened because we wanted to remove our racist monuments is really only reinforcing the racism and exposing the racism of the monuments themselves. And I call on City Council I do wish that they would be willing to do as David has suggested and just take them down tomorrow or this afternoon. I'm available if you need help.
We got rope.
We got rope. We got some friends. We'll bring some construction friends over and we'll rip that sucker down.
Mm-hmm. But we know this is in the courts now, and they were offered an injunction on having any type of action done with the statues. One of the cases that one of the Heritage Foundations here in town made was that to remove the statues would do what they describe, and I quote, irreparable harm to them. To reiterate, they argued in court that to remove the statues would do them irreparable harm. Think about that. I urge you all to think about that. We have what I like to call bow tie bigots who are managing the Monument Fund and other legal cases and legal resources to maintain the statues in our public spaces as free speech, as historical preservation. It's a beautiful equestrian monument. It's all of these things. But I think we need to think about why. Why does this statue cause you irreparable harm if it were to be relocated to the museum? What is it about your identity that you need to see a, how long is that, 50-foot, 25-foot statue in a public park, that your personhood is somehow bound to a public monument? And so I think that irreparable harm takes on a new context today. And I urge us to, I urge the city council to be prepared to lose on August 30th. And I urge the council to be prepared to galvanize whatever resources they need to fight to move this case to the higher courts, to a more friendly jurisdiction that would allow for a more fair and equitable hearing.
I just want to say that Hitler was seen as a joke, too, in 1930. And
yeah.
Trump was seen as a joke.
Yeah.
In 2016. And the more press you give them, the more time you give them to speak, the more you entertain their words, look how many people are going to follow, like lemmings off a cliff.
And there's this weird dissonance about, the statue being removed being harmful to them. When anyone, a person of color or an ally to a person of color, talks about systemic racism or bigotry or misogyny or anything else, we're called snowflakes, right? We're called weak. Why can't we just suck it up?
Why can't we get over it?
Well, we can't get over it because you've got 50-foot tall monuments to
down
slave
at us.
Over owners looking and, down and over us. That's why.
That's what I hate, this kind of forced position of reverence. When you stand at the base of that statue, the only way to see it is to look up at it.
Mm-hmm.
And this coercive gesture, this posture that requires you to look up. And this, I love this idea of calling us snowflakes and bad names and telling us to get over it. When they still seem to think that they won the Civil War. They've had over 100 years, well, I'm sorry, I can't count, 200 years to get over their loss as the Confederacy. And instead of getting over it, they haven't. And one other thing I just want to add really quickly, I also hear people saying that black people in particular should do a better job of practicing radical forgiveness. You often find, like after tragedies, white people who haven't had anything to say about unrest and racial injustice posting pictures of black people saying, I forgive Dylann Roof, or I forgive this, and I forgive. And I would like to see an example of a white person on the right forgiving anything. Show me where white people have done an example of forgiving. Forgiving.
I wish that the people, your point is well received, that indeed the presence of this violent right and these white supremacists shows that they are unable to forgive the people who actually won the Civil War. And that is, Lisa, you've used the phrase before, participation trophies, which is all that these statues are. That indeed, because of their size and because of the amount of money that goes into maintaining white supremacy in all of its forms and staging this constant production that forces the viewer into submission, indeed, that is a work of art that Charlottesville is most committed to.
Well, and I also want to point out that while, we have to look up at Lee, like one of the very few markers talking about and centering black people like a year and a half ago was voted in closed session of city council to be moved off a podium and sunken into the walkway, colored the same way so that not only do you walk over it, but you barely notice it. And that's the marker to where the slave blocks were. Come on.
They say get over it. It isn't over. We do not live in a post-racial society.
Thank you.
Just because Jay-Z and P. Diddy and Michael Jordan got a whole bunch of money, that does not mean that black people are free. We're not. And all of those monies and all of those riches can be taken away at a moment's notice. Talk to Tiger Woods.
Right.
So it's like, we know how the system works. We know how capitalism works, and we know how these American systems work against people of color. We know how they marginalize people of color. And no, I'm not over it, because it isn't over. And no, I can't just get over the fact of slavery and pain, because I feel it every day in different forms and in different ways. We have to do a drop. We're going to come right back with Lisa Wolfork and Jenna Hawkins. I'm going to get it right at one point. I've only known you for like 4 months, so it's. I'm going to get it right at one point. Leslie's with me, Clinton on the boards. This is Homegrown. It is 33 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, a very special Homegrown on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, talking about the events of August 12th, how we move forward after. Clinton, you had a question that you wanted to pose?
Yeah, my question to all of you is to speak to something that struck you, that struck you about yesterday, either in that stays with you, either in a positive way or in a negative way.
Well, I've already spoke to the things that struck me negatively, but I do want to say that our community showed great strength and resilience in this time. I do believe that a lot of good friends and people that we know got injured, and one poor soul was lost. But we accomplished a lot. We created a blueprint. We showed people how a community can mobilize and fight against white supremacy in the face of all of this violence and murder and beatings and assaults throughout the community, how groups quickly responded to those events, how they showed up within minutes when the police just stood by and watched the city burn. As all of this happened, we protected and served our community in the places of people that were paid to do so and did not. And I think that's really reassuring that we can trust in our community members for support and for absolute guidance and care. And I found that to be very reassuring in the town that I live in.
Yeah, I had the same experience, because as I said, I was at Champion most of the day, and so the terrorist attack, vehicular terrorist attack, took place only a couple of blocks from me, and immediately following, I see this beautiful group of friends and fellow activists coming toward Champion, not only to make sure that I was okay, but to make sure I continued to be okay, and get me to a safe location where they were sure nothing was going to happen to me. And I think that was terrifying and affirming in the same moment. Terrifying that it had to even happen, but affirming that these people who I have been mobilizing with and communing with in the past few weeks came so quickly, and it was all about, are you okay? We're going to make sure you're still going to be okay. We're going to a safe place. And I do want to mention that to David's point about policemen standing by, I have it on good authority that that was a decision that was made top down, that the officers were basically ordered not to engage. So that was not a decision of a single or group of actual officers. That was an order.
And let's also reiterate the fact that Chief Al Thomas was actually given the permission by Mike Signer to order a curfew in the city of Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And he did not.
He did not. Yeah.
So he just allowed white supremacists to roam free in the middle of the night and terrorize more communities. Again, let him roam free and clear.
One of the things that stood out to me is, and I was on the ground with David for much of the day yesterday. I felt like I didn't get home until midnight. I was with other work that I was doing, and I do a lot of work in my professional life talking about symbols and culture. And I really cherish and value the opportunity to also be on the ground And so I was honored to be able to stand with community members, people who I knew, colleagues who teach Shakespeare and feminist theory and anthropology and music, and to see those colleagues also out there with me near McGuffey and other sites was incredibly affirming. It was also wonderful to make connections with strangers, with people that I didn't know and would probably never see again. I was on site about maybe 100 feet from the terror incident, and I had never seen so much chaos in real life in my life, and I don't imagine that that will escape me. I don't want to go over the details here, but one thing that I find heartening about it was seeing the type of pastoral care, actually, that was being provided by Reverend Sekou and the clergy collective. This one girl was injured and very disoriented, and so Sekou handed her over to me and then two other clergy folks. We walked her to where her mother was. This girl had lost her shoes. She had lost her phone. The pocket of her jeans was completely removed, and she was shaking like a leaf and crying, and I was next to her feeling pretty much the same way, and just it was so harrowing. And to look back on that moment, which I don't imagine I will be able to not look back on, and to think about people coming together, standing together in a type of muscular love to defend this city from racial terror, is something that I think is something that Charlottesville can be very proud of. Yet we need not be glib. We need not say that we've done our part and can move on, because I think we are a town in grief, we are a town in mourning, and we are a town that has a lot of soul searching to do about what its values actually are. I believe it is completely apt that the white supremacists march through the University of Virginia. I have no illusions about what the institution represents and promotes and has promoted historically. I also acknowledge that I am part of that institution, as were many of my colleagues who were out on the ground that day. And for me, it seems that we have an opportunity here to close the gap between the promise of America and the practices of America. We have the chance, we have the opportunity to reclaim phrases like heritage and phrases like patriotism and phrases like love of nation, because I believe that everybody that was standing out there was doing so for a type of love and patriotism, and to allow America to be all that it's promised. We are a nation built on resistance. There would be no America if there was no revolution, and you can't have revolution without resistance. And so that needs to be reclaimed, and I think we're working on it. And I just wanted to affirm that it was a beautiful moment of solidarity and community, but it was not painless.
Jenna, I want to let you go and say a few words, and then I want to speak on Lisa's point about patriotism and democracy. But you look like this. I just want to hear your account of the day and what you do.
I was so struck by the disparity between how these white supremacists were treated by police, in that they were told, you know, the police, I guess, were told to stand down, and also about, you know, being that I was watching all of the coverage in real time and trying to kind of analyze it and be in conversation with media outlets, I was really dismayed by, first of all, many reports coming out and saying car attacks anti-racist protesters, as if it's a reanimated car.
Right.
And as if white supremacy doesn't live in individuals. Indeed, we came together as a community to fight white supremacy, but individuals who espouse white supremacy must be held accountable for their actions, and they were not by our police force. And furthermore, one image that really struck me, that upset me a great deal, and it'll seem, and it is small potatoes compared to the egregious act of hate yesterday, and also the ways in which we have been pleading with city council for months and warning them about what could happen if you give platform to white supremacy. But Siva Weekly tweeted this, this statement with two photos. The statement is, Black Lives Matter follows white nationalists to Market Street parking garage. Fighting starts at entrance to garage. Injuries on both sides. And the photos actually depict what I see is actually a an anti-racist protester, a black man, bleeding from a head wound, and then a Unite the Right participant with pink spray paint on his khakis. I do not see injuries on both sides, and I also do not see any evidence that Black Lives Matter was in any way the
aggressor.
The aggressor, yeah. There is really no evidence of that, and there was no need to frame the violence in that light. And I think that it is a failing on the part of a lot of our local media outlets that they are constantly throwing aggression into the mix. That Black Lives Matter, really, I've never seen any member of Black Lives Matter ever show that kind of aggression.
Yeah.
Ever. And, it isn't present.
It's the adage, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, and I think we need to not only hold our local media accountable, but I think that that also needs to be a top down, you know, from not only editors, but from our city council, our mayor.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to be top down. Please tell the truth. Just tell the truth. And if you don't know it, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. And furthermore, the ways in which it is always, the violence is always put somehow with Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
Yes. And those images very much don't show that. And in fact, we have more images that were released of a black man being badly beaten in that same garage, probably in the same scuffle.
Yeah.
By Unite the Right participants and by white supremacists, with no help except for from our community, from fellow anti-racist allies.
Yeah.
And this is the danger when you think about representation and the symbolic nature of media, is that we have to unpack or undo our commitment to false equivalencies. This notion that balanced journalism requires that you find, you know, many sides, as that president has said. There are many sides to this issue.
Not my president.
But this notion that we have to arrange narratives that say, well, this is what happened on the left and this is what happened on the right. And there's no way. You cannot imagine, I don't believe. The opposite of white supremacist violence isn't anti-racism. Like, these two don't go together. It's absolutely insane. And the notion that Black Lives Matter is such a capacious category, that any black person is is acting on behalf of a national organization, suggests that they're willing to throw off the false equivalency narrative when it suits them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's worth kind of challenging this idea that balanced, moderate views are actually incredibly loaded and already predisposed to benefit white supremacy.
Yeah, there's a false narrative that every black person speaks for Black Lives Matter, whereas every organization member in Black Lives Matter speaks for people of color. And they fail to understand that. But I just want to speak about American values and patriotism and democracy. This is how fascism works. Fascism is used to breed on democratic values and use them for their own accord in their, you know, in their own forwarding of their agenda, such as free speech, such as freedom of assembly. When all you're doing is coming together to intimidate and harm people and actually remove those freedoms of speech and freedoms of assembly from those people that you want extricated and eradicated from the face of the earth. It's kind of like the way a parasite works, mm-hmm. or the way a disease works.
Yeah.
It feeds on the host. It clones its actual genetic makeup, and it pretends to be what it wants to be, yet it metastasizes and it creates this whole new disease, and it filters throughout the body and it multiplies until it's dead. And what they're doing is killing democracy from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Fascism is nothing but a parasite on democracy, and I wish people would understand that these people are not using democratic American values the same way the Confederacy was a treasonous group that was trying to denounce American values of the Union and separate themselves from America as much as possible in order to enslave a group of people and marginalize them even further for their own financial and, you know, personal gain. So,
yeah,
I think that's incredibly mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, that's why every time I speak about this, I call it a cancer. That's what it is.
It is
an aberration of a normal cell that then multiplies and infects everything around it, creating a tumor. And just like if you were diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, you don't go home and close all your windows and lock all your doors and sit in a ball and cry about it and refuse to fix it. You make an appointment with an oncologist and you get it taken care of. Like that is your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So
you address it.
And so my thing has always been, I don't care how you address it. Like, I don't care if you're addressing it is standing face to face and screaming at the top of your lungs, or running for city council and changing laws, or creating art, or I don't care how you do it, but do something. Do something.
Do something, Charlottesville. We gotta do a drop. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. It is 50 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you missed an incredibly poignant Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Sean McCord. His guest is Dr. Pam Moran from Albemarle County Schools. They're going to be talking about education. But right now we're talking about Charlottesville and the aftermath of A12. So I just want everybody to share their final thoughts. Thank you so much for being on the show, Lisa and Jenna, and how do we move forward?
Well, I think the best way are the events that are set up, the healing events that are set up in town, and I think Jenna, you have a list of those.
Yes, for Charlottesville civilians looking to express their grief and their heartbreak. And to come together with their community, with their anti-racist community. There is a meet and greet with Nakia Walker, our city council candidate, at Forest Hills Park at 1. So meet up with your people there. And there will also be a candlelit vigil for Heather Heyer, the woman we lost yesterday, whose last public sentiment, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention, I think we've given great credence to on Homegrown today. So we will assemble at 6, gathering prayerfully and peacefully in the name of Heather and Heather's family. We will begin at the University Rotunda at 6. And at 7, we will walk down West Main to Emancipation Park to remember and celebrate her and our community's strength. And for those unable to participate in the walk, we encourage them to either meet at the rotunda and drive to the park or meet us at Emancipation.
Yeah. Thanks. First of all, I want to thank Lisa and Jenna for coming on the show. You ready?
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
So, love trumps hate. That's a slogan we've heard for a while now. It was made popular because of a presidential election. But it's become some kind of mantra that we say to each other to assuage the feeling of helplessness that we have when it comes to dealing with the amount of vitriol we have had to deal with for so long. And before you get it twisted, I think I'm talking about some political endeavor. I want you to know I am speaking directly to people of color. I am not talking about the past 2 years. I am talking about our entire lives. I am talking about the fact that we have been born or naturalized into a country that has never truly been our home. And it has never truly been our home because it was founded by men who believed we were less than. No matter what anyone tries to tell you, it is impossible to separate that mindset from the pieces of paper they wrote declaring this a new nation. the tenets of racism, bigotry, misogyny, and all kinds of phobias of people that were simply different are weaved into every line and every word of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Because it was in the men who wrote it. Yesterday, I think a lot of Charlottesville was surprised yet again about what came to our town. They were astonished. They couldn't believe that there were actually people in the world who thought like this. But you see, people of color, trans people, queer people, anyone who hasn't been deemed quote-unquote normal has been dealing with this their entire life. In a country that claims to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. So I say we need to reclaim that mantra. We are the land of the free and the home of the brave. And yesterday, Charlottesville lost three brave souls. Three free souls. Yesterday, one was lost to an act of hatred and terror, and the other two to a tragic accident. And this is not a time to assign blame. That will come as it always does. This is a time where we need to unite as a community, as one community. We need to do what is necessary by any means necessary to rid our community and hopefully the world of any vestige of this insidious cancer. But right now, I think the most important thing is that we need to heal. We need to mourn. We need to take some time to try and process something that is impossible to process in a logical way. And when we've done that, just like our ancestors before us, we will get up and we will put one foot in front of the other, as people of color have done since the beginning of time. So, yeah. Love does trump hate. But the conclusion of that thought is we hope. The conclusion of that thought is eventually. Time is something that is not only relative, but fleeting. And for those of you who were aghast yesterday, who could not believe what had invaded your home, your time is now. And you cannot wait any longer.
We'd like to thank our guests, Professor Lisa Wolfork and Jenna Hockman, for being here. Coming up next is a Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Sean McCord. His guest is Dr. Pam Moran from Albemarle County Schools. My head hurts. My body hurts. But I cannot imagine the pain that the family of Heather Heyer is feeling. Be outraged, Charlottesville. Pay attention to the people that feel this pain and this terror on a daily basis. Even today, as we march in these vigils, we will be watching our backs. We will be paying attention because they're out there and they're still willing to hurt and harm and drive over us and try to kill us. We love you, Heather. Thank you for everything. I have nothing more to say.
We'll see you guys next week.
This is Homegrown.
Fighting the trap. All things being equal. White guy. Gig at the pig, we go hit the shindig out in the bird place where the homes are big. And then we're mixing it up and we're dancing it up. And a cocktail, I'm laughing it up. Cause everybody there's just a little bit tight. And everybody's white and they're leaning to the right. And that's when I hear you talking this shit about those people in the ghetto. How they ain't living right, how they're lazy down. Scary side of town, how it's their own damn fault, how they keep themselves down. And my wide smile became a frown. I just slip up and trip and lay it down. This is a land of opportunity and not a land of charity. And those who have immunity want to broaden this disparity. Do you hear me clearly? You got a question about my clarity? Am I too light to be so biased? Too white for this analogy? Well, the great reverend so-and-so, I know I'm not. But I recognize all the breaks that I got. Cause my skin gets me in and my skin gets me by. My skin helps me win and I don't have to wonder why. There are some people who have to grow up so much harder than I do. And if I grew up in the project, things might not be so cool. No matter how hard I work, no matter how much I did to keep my language and color and heritage hid. So you roll up your windows and pretend that you don't see them. Then you lecture us all on equality and freedom. How I wish a dark skin would grow all over you. We see who's got the same opportunity as who. All things being equal.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.